Hello and welcome to episode 270 of Some Like It Scott. I'm your host, Scott Harvey, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Scott Shelton. Today on the podcast, the fight of the century has now become the team-up of the century as we review the epic sequel, Godzilla x Kong, The New Empire. But first, how are you, Scott?
Well, I'm glad we've already put a stake in the ground on how do you say the title of this movie?
I had to take a stance,
Godzilla,
and this is the one that
times
I chose.
Kong, Godzilla x Kong, Godzilla cross Kong, who knows?
Godzilla x Kong just doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah, it probably is either Godzilla, I mean, it's probably Godzilla cross Kong. This is the great debate. We should get some experts on. This is what the podcast should actually be
Let's
about.
Let's just say what we're thinking. It's a dumb title.
It's a pretty funny title.
Yeah.
This was a really fun boardroom whiteboard conversation that the producers at Legendary and Warner Brothers had when they were naming this film. Very funny name. I'm doing well though, to answer your question. Feel like I've had like a hiatus, frankly, from like watching movies over the last couple months. I think we were talking about this either off air or maybe even on air. I can't remember anymore last time. And I'm not going to lie. We'll talk about my thoughts and your thoughts, of course, as well about Godzilla and Kong and their latest entry. But what I will say is that for whatever it's worth, when I was walking to the theater on Saturday night to watch this movie, I wasn't that mad about it. You know, I was looking forward to it. I didn't expect it to be great. And I left the theater. I was like, you know, maybe I'm in movie mode again. Maybe I'm back. Yeah, I'm thinking I'm back. Now, our mileage will vary on the quality of the movie that we watched over the weekend, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I feel like my movie hiatus is behind me. We're back with a vengeance. And I'll be honest, I think Godzilla x Kong is the perfect kind of movie to ease me back into movie mode, because I really wasn't in the mood for anything too serious. And I think at the very least, we can say Godzilla and Kong, not a very serious movie. So I think it's safe to say, not a spoiler to say that.
Yeah. I mean, again, the title, you know, you can barely read it without chuckling. At least I can't, but
they should have just said New World Empire, like do a riff on New World Order instead of the New Empire.
Yeah, it was back to the movies for me too, though, I guess first time since Dune. It had been a while, and I actually used my Regal Unlimited membership for the first time because I've had to switch off of AMC Stubs since coming here to Greensboro. So got that experience. By the way, the only difference that I can tell is that you do have to pay like a 49% or 49 cent convenience fee.
Yeah. What were we talking about this? I was like, they're going to make you pay the convenience fee. That's what I always remember about the Regal thing. It's like you have to pay the upcharge on IMAX on like premium format if you go to it, and you have to pay the convenience fee, which is unbelievable. I mean, I know it's only 50 cents, but it's like unbelievable that they're making you pay the convenience fee after you're paying for the membership. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's crazy that, well, there was an AMC here for until about a year ago, I think, and then it closed down. It was not a super nice theater. I did go to it in the past, but yeah, it is kind of wild that they don't have one. The closest one's in High Point, but we will ball anyway with our Regal Unlimited membership.
It's certainly better than paying full price for all the movies that we see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it's like the same price per month as Stubbs is. So, you know, you're making your money back on two movies. But, All right, Scott. Well, as mentioned, our film today is Godzilla x Kong, The New Empire. Director Adam Wingard returns from 2020's Godzilla vs. Kong to direct this sequel. New Empire picks up with Godzilla and Kong at peace, the former maintaining order between the humans and the Titans, while the latter resides on the Hollow Earth, still under the watchful eye of Dr. Eileen Andrews, played again by Rebecca Hall. However, the scientists on the Hollow Earth soon pick up a mysterious signal which triggers not only Godzilla and Kong, but also Gia, played again by Kaylee Hoddle, the last survivor of the Skull Island Iwi tribe and the adopted daughter of Dr. Andrews, who begins having troubling visions. Meanwhile, Kong has discovered a fellow tribe of apes who are led by a tyrannical beast known as the Scar King, who becomes Kong's new enemy. As Kong battles this adversary, Andrews, Gia, conspiracy podcaster Bernie Hayes, played by Brian Tyree Henry, and veterinarian Trapper, played by Dan Stevens, journey to the Hollow Earth to investigate the source of the signal. What they find will surprise everyone and once again send Godzilla and Kong on a collision course, although this time with plenty of reason to form an alliance if they are to maintain balance in this universe. Scott, does this monster-laden sequel deliver the same blend of epic action and human drama as last year's sleeper hit Godzilla Minus One? Or is the new Empire a spectacle that can't hold the immense weight of its two central beasts?
Yeah, I think what I will say is that this gives a lot less Godzilla Minus One vibes than it does Transformers Rise of the Beast vibes.
Yes, 100% is what I was thinking about that movie the whole time.
Yeah, I do think that ultimately, I'll say this. For a long stretch of the film, I thought Godzilla Cross Kong here was doing what Transformers Rise of the Beast wanted to do better than it. I will say, I still think that's true by the end of the movie, but the last act, some of the stuff is just like, what's going on here, guys? Come on.
The G.I. Joe tie-in in this one was even crazier.
I don't know if there was a post-credit scene in this movie. I did not stick around. There wasn't? Okay.
The woman next to me was very clearly like, she was living for this. And so as soon as the credits hit, she goes, there's nothing else after this. So
informing the audience. That she knew.
So
yeah, but here's the thing. I think, and I was sort of alluding to this to you again. I think off air last week, where I'm like, or maybe this was to someone else. It all blurs together for me at this point. Honestly, the best case scenario for me in this movie is getting like a 3.5 or 4 star, like complete turn your brain off, go watch some like CG kaiju beat the shit out of each other. Like, that is the best case scenario for the movie. And I think that it does deliver some of that. Unfortunately, like Transformers Rise of the Beast, for some reason, they think that people give a shit about any of the human characters in this movie. Yeah. And the truth is that they don't. No one does. And certainly the way they treat the characters, no one's going to. So I just don't know, like, why they're fooling themselves. Like, the main characters of these films should be Godzilla and should be Kong. And again, I think for a good stretch of the movie, they do double down on that. And they focus on that a lot better than what Transformers did, which I think was just a total mess, how much focus they put on the human characters. I still think there's too much of that in this. I am willing to suspend my disbelief on some decisions and some, we'll say, like, exterior to the plot realities of these sort of franchises and worlds. But at some point, I just can't continue to suspend my disbelief at the absolutely stupid shit people are doing in this movie. Like, unbelievably stupid stuff people are doing in this movie. I have no idea what's going on.
How about those planes that were flying straight at, I believe it was Godzilla, just flying straight at him, just shooting like rockets. Like,
yeah.
First of all, those aren't going to do anything. Second of all, you're flying directly at a monster who can just raise his hand. And it, much like Zach Eadie throwing down a dunk, he can just raise his hand and
swat them out of the air.
Squeeze his hand and your plane is gone.
It's just like, you've been, like, at this point, the world, I mean, not to get into like franchise lore here, right? But like, the world of in this universe has been dealing with Godzilla for like a decade now.
Yeah.
Like, what are you guys doing? Have you not seen the footage of him destroying the planes?
At the Colosseum?
Before?
Yeah.
Sure, exactly. It's just very confusing. I mean, applause to Millie Bobby Brown for extricating herself from this franchise. I'm glad she's over on Netflix making equally shitty garbage for them. Just, I guess, stuff that she enjoys doing.
Tunola Homes.
I mean, you have any? You're alighting the most recent one, Damsel, which she is like a fantasy type drama.
This is the first time
like,
hearing of it.
Oh no, it's a real thing. Yeah, Karen informed me that it was bad. And so, you know.
Shocking.
Yeah. It's funny that she extricates herself from this franchise and then goes and makes God knows what for Netflix. I mean, she's making a lot of money, so happy for her. And she doesn't have to deal with whatever they're doing to shoot these movies, unlike Rebecca Hall and Brian Tyree Henry, who have somehow managed to continue to be a part of these franchises. I will say, was Dan Stevens in the last one? I feel like they treated him as if he was in the last movie.
Oh, they 100% did. They're like, oh, it's your favorite Australian rascal.
I was like, I don't really remember him.
Oh, wait, no, he wasn't in the last
I've watched all these movies. I made the interesting choice to watch all the Godzilla and Kong movies in this franchise. before the last one, before Godzilla versus Kong, whatever that one was called, and or King of the Monsters. No, I don't even remember. It doesn't matter.
There was Godzilla, Godzilla King of the Monsters, Kong Skull Island, Godzilla versus Kong, and now this is the fifth one, I believe.
Yeah, Godzilla versus Kong. That was the one I was thinking about. I think that you got the order wrong in a couple of those, but that's fine.
Oh, yeah, no, that wasn't the order. I just mean those are the movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was just like, they really hard sell you on, like, remember this character from the last movie? And I'm like, I don't remember this character from the last movie. But I like Dan Stevens a lot. I think he's doing some really weird stuff recently. He's doing some real big acting with a capital A. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if that totally works out, but I enjoy seeing him and stuff. But ultimately, this movie is just like really stupid. Like, this movie is really stupid. It would have been smarter to be arguably even stupider by focusing on more of the Scar King, Godzilla, Mothra, Kong of it all. Or the alternative is you do what Gareth Edwards did with a Godzilla film from 2016, and you make him this, like, basically you make a horror movie about this thing that is just destroying San Francisco. So it's like one or the other. Like, you got to choose the whole, like, hybrid that they're doing. I mean, it's clearly working at the box office, right? This film put up huge numbers at the box office this weekend, probably a little bit in part because of Godzilla Minus One's performance and just the hype around the IP and the character that was generated at the end of last year. But I mean, frankly, it must be, it's drawing crowds, I guess is what I'll say. So it's working on that front. This is the last film that Legendary is doing with Warner Brothers. I don't know how that impacts the sort of Legendary MonsterVerse, if they have the rights to just go and make the next film in this franchise with, you know, whatever studio ends up being the highest bidder that's not Warner Brothers. I'm not 100% sure how that's going to work. But, I mean, this is a franchise hit that they have on their hands, and we're going to see more of them. I just wish that they, honestly, that they cared even less about the humans in this. That's my major piece of feedback for the film. I think we should just have more monster stuff and less human stuff.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have gone on record as the monster stuff I don't care about, right? Like, that does nothing for me. These monsters are not anthropomorphic. They don't talk, you know, they don't behave.
You want Godzilla to talk? Would you like Godzilla to talk in the movie?
Sure.
You're like me, why hungry not? For nuclear.
There's a lot stupider stuff out there, but but so that is not really what gets me going. And so therefore, what we are left with to sort of anchor me to this movie is the human drama. And as you
you're screwed.
There's nothing. There's nothing. And they
try.
Well,
they try to do something, right? They try to do the whole mother-daughter thing, right?
With the mother-daughter, plot. But I don't care. You're talking about the characters from the last movie. I had to recall whether or not the little girl was in the last movie which she is. But
and she was also in Kong Skull Island. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the little girl character like this is become like a trope, right? Like, it reminded me of The Creator last year, and I feel like there's been other movies as well, right, where it's just like the little girl who has like the abilities or whatever, who is the Lassan El Gaib, if you will.
Don't get me started, Scott. Don't get me started.
But it was tiresome to me. And yeah, even an actress of Rebecca Hall's quality can do nothing to elevate the non-existent, you know, script here. And the non-existent character development. I mean, the movie is just perfunctory, right? Like that I think it shares also with Transformers Rise of the Beast, because it doesn't feel like this movie matters at all. And like, to be fair, I'm not invested in the MonsterVerse or any of that. Obviously, I didn't care about Godzilla versus Kong. I certainly don't care about this, but you know, this is a franchise, right? And this is a sequel to another movie and a sequel to other movies. And so, in my opinion, it should be moving something forward, right? And I'm not really sure how much of a different place we are in at the end of this movie than we are at the beginning of this movie, right? Because the villains have been defeated, spoiler alert, and the big central human conflict, right, as you've alluded to, is the Gia character, the daughter, is she going to stay with her mother, or is she going to stay with the Iwi people, with her tribe, who has been discovered now that there is more of them out there? And she decides to stay with her mother, right? And so, you know, that's where she was at the beginning of the movie. It's like, what, plot-wise, what are we advancing here? And again, not that I really care about the MonsterVerse, but I can't, just from a storytelling perspective, it does, I still have to think about that context, and it grinds my gears a little bit that this movie is just kind of spinning its wheels when it comes to the plot. And, you know, if you like the action, then there's a good bit of it, but it's not, doesn't,
I mean,
really,
I don't know why you're going to see this movie if you're not into the action. Is what yeah. I said. I know that obviously you went and saw it for something different and you didn't get that.
Yeah.
But like the average moviegoer who's buying a ticket to go see this movie, surely they're not showing up looking for a human story. I think people found that in Godzilla Minus One, right? They didn't necessarily show up for that, but they found that in that film. You're not finding it in this movie.
Yeah. No, you're not. And honestly, the action takes a while to get to, right? Like, it's really not until the last 20 to 25 minutes of the movie. And it actually, you know, again, I don't remember that much about Godzilla versus Kong, but I kind of remembered it was just like, you know, again, spinning its wheels. Like, we know that that this conflict is going to happen. Let's just get to it, right? And I did feel the same way a little bit at times in this movie, because, you know, Godzilla's in a separate place, Kong's in a separate place. It's like, we know that they're going to meet up, right? We know that there's going to be this battle. It's just like, why is there all this other stuff that nobody cares about? And I was just bored watching this movie. And I don't know, is the plot, you know, that gets them together ultimately, was it incomprehensible because it seemed that way to me, or was I just too bored to actually care enough to understand?
I'm not 100% sure what you mean by incomprehensible. I certainly thought it was very convenient, is what I'll say. And I have, frankly, I'll be honest, I have absolutely no idea how Godzilla gets from the North Pole to Gibraltar in like one scene. I'm like,
oh,
those
there's
places
so
are
much
globetrotting.
There's so much globetrotting in this movie too. It's just like smash cut, and we're in Cairo, Egypt, at the pyramids. You know, just like destroying.
That's where the portal or whatever from Earth,
but it's just,
shoots up. That's what I'm saying. So like, but like Godzilla was just at the North Pole killing Tiamat and absorbing all the like nuclear energy or whatever from Tiamat, and then all of a sudden is on the Rock of Gibraltar, and then in Cairo. Like, at least the last two are a little closer to each other, but man, last time I checked a map, Gibraltar and the Arctic Circle are not near each other. And so I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, and when you ultimately do arrive at the end and the big smash-bang climax of the movie, there's too much going on for me. Like, because you have all of these new characters who are also getting involved. You have, like, Shimo and whoever this other, the young ape is. I don't, Soku or something like that. I don't remember exactly.
Is the ape named? That's funny.
Well, that Zuko? And that's what I was about to say. This reading the Wikipedia, I learned a lot of names of characters, because I don't think any of these apes, like, you know, or I guess the Scar King or whatever.
Scar King was definitely named, but I guess Zuko is the name of the small ape. I don't know.
And you know, again, you have multiple apes, you have multiple Godzilla looking figures, right? And I'm like, I don't know who I'm supposed to be rooting for. I don't know who this, like, you know, it gets convoluted for me.
I think you're always supposed to be rooting for Kong, I think.
Yes, I think that's the one thing that is clear, but there do seem to be shifting alliances and stuff at other times. And I don't know. I just felt this is a Godzilla and Kong movie. Like, why are we sort of confusing the matter with? It was okay when they brought like Mechagodzilla in the last movie. It was okay when they brought Mothra in this movie. But, you know, these other apes like the Scar King, all of that, it's a whole bunch of nothing for somebody who already cares very, very little about all of this.
Yeah. I mean, I just go back. I just think ultimately, like, this film is just trying to be a very rote action, I don't want to say comedy because it's not like that, but like action film of that ilk. And ultimately, I think where Godzilla Minus One succeeds is, yes, it has this really emotional, felt human story, but it treats Godzilla and these massive kaiju, and I think it just treats it like this horrible, I don't know exactly the right way to describe it, but it's like this real monster who will destroy everything and that we should be deeply afraid of. And I think you visually see that in the movie when Godzilla's like sleeping in the Colosseum and destroying Rome as he leaves the city, or in France when he's absorbing this like nuclear reactor's worth of energy and then destroying the countryside that he's in. But the sort of fear and reverence with which these monsters are treated like hasn't really been the case at best since Godzilla in this franchise, since Godzilla King of the Monsters, but at, you know, at most cynical since Gareth Edwards Godzilla film back in 2016. So I just think that it either like it's sort of like fully committed to being this sort of like fun in air quotes action franchise versus this like serious sort of like more scary tinged franchise. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong. I just think that like the formula in which this film is operating just like ultimately doesn't really feel like it has the right balance for me. And, you know, audiences may disagree with that. Certainly the people in my audience were having some fun with some of the gags from Dan Stevens' character, as well as I can't remember the guys like the fighter or the pilot's name who goes initially with them down to Hollow Earth, who is killed in the jungle as they approach the Iwi tribe. But regardless, the humor, it's not really what it's all made out to be about. And I just think that there should be these things should just be treated with a little bit more seriousness and sincerity for like the kaiju level of stuff to actually work in the film.
I mean, sometimes I agree with you, but other times I feel like the movie almost is too serious. I mean, I don't know what to think.
I mean, the like film's not serious. I mean,
there are plenty of attempts at humor and stuff like that. I mean, but they fall so
like,
flat.
Like
as
the
said.
Entire Dan Stevens
Brian
character
Tyree
is just,
Henry
is just
well,
humor.
And Brian Tyree Henry's character,
sure. Yeah,
is. I mean, he's so annoying though in this movie. I never thought I would say that about.
I mean, he was Brian so annoying Henry. In Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, I don't remember, but I assume you're.
I mean, he had a lesser role in that. I mean, maybe I'm just sort of repressing
the
memory.
Because it was more of like an ensemble. Like there were, you know.
Because Millie Bobby Brown was in the movie still.
Right, they were tying in the Godzilla cast with the Kong Skull Island cast. Yeah,
no, that's right. I just think that like they did a good job slimming the cast down here, but I don't know. They needed to slim it down even more. I like just frankly, I think there were plenty of fight scenes to go not necessarily against, almost sort of just as an addendum to what you were saying around like it takes a long time to get to the climactic battle. Like there's all these moments where like Godzilla's fighting this alien invasion, Kong's fighting Scar King for the first time. The opening scene is like Kong like intimidating like local creatures in Hollow Earth. I think that there's all these moments, but so many of them are so brief. Like you see Godzilla fight Tiamat up in the Arctic Circle, and that's like a 30-second scene, and he like kills him and absorbs his energy. Like why isn't that a big set piece in the movie? It's very, I mean, like the answer is probably because it's so damn expensive to make that kind of stuff, but I just think that that's what people are there to watch, right? Like let's be real, like that's why people are coming to the movie. You should have more of that. I understand it's more expensive, but it's just like you probably don't need Rebecca Hall and Brian Tyree Henry in this movie, frankly.
Nobody's going to see it because of that. Yeah,
I mean, yeah. I mean, for real, it's just like, do you really care about them promoting the movie? Who are there for? Like, I mean, I am some of the biggest fans of both
yeah. of them, but I would not have gone and saw this movie unless, you know, for the podcast. So.
It's just, it's kind of crazy. I mean, it doesn't really fully compute in my head. I mean, I know you need some recurring characters to like stabilize, and maybe that's the reason why, like, these are the ones they identified. Cut loose Millie Bobby Brown, cut loose. You know, the other people who I'm forgetting right now who are part of the franchise who are almost certainly more expensive than Rebecca Hall and Brian Tyree Henry. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really mind it that much. I do, of course, wish it were better than it was. It's just the form, the formula, it's not measured quite right for me. It needs to be more, even more one direction, or like all the way back in the other direction. It's in the middle ground somewhere, and it just doesn't really work. The screenplay, I mean, not that anyone cares about the screenplay in this film, but it's just total garbage. Like, the screenplay is just total garbage in this movie.
I will say, I noted that I clocked that one of the screenwriters on this movie is Terry Rossio, who, along with Ted Elliott, I think is the other guy. They've written Pirates of the Caribbean, at least the first couple movies. They wrote,
the original Aladdin.
Yeah. I was like, what's
Shrek?
That?
A lot of animated movies.
They have written some swashbucklers, and there
National
was like
Treasure.
A
Book of Secrets.
Yeah, the second one, yeah. There was a moment where I was like, oh, they want this movie to be like a swashbuckler when they're like,
oh, they totally
know,
do.
100%. In the forest with the Iwi tribe and all that. And I was like, I mean, it's just such a, it doesn't have any, the,
it's
any
just so half-baked
to the charm of any of those movies that we just mentioned there.
Yeah, and to have that charm, right? Like, you need characters that we care about. No one gives a shit about Rebecca Hall's character. I'm sorry. Like, just no one cares about that character. And you need, like, and I think that they're, like, conscious of that, and that's why they introduced the Dan Stevens character, right? Like, he's so, like, silly. Like, he's silly and stupid, but, like, that's the vibe that they're going for, right? Like, that's the vibe they want. Because he's, like he's charming. Again, you may agree or disagree with that, but, like, the idea is, like, he's trying to be this, like, super charm offensive guy. Like, he's going to give good vibes, and the film's going to be wandering through Hollow Earth jungle for certain portions, and we're just going to be having a good time together. They're going to get some hijinks. There's going to be some crazy things that happen, right? Like, they have the pilot guy get eaten by the tree or the plant or whatever, and the movie goes on. But the problem is just, like, they don't get there with the characters, and that's why I think that, you know, you just gotta recalibrate again on the human side for the inevitable next movie. I mean, I think Adam Wingard's probably just locked into these movies, right? Like, they're making money.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is making money. I haven't really seen the numbers, but
it made $85 million domestically last week.
You know, again, Adam Wingard is one of these people. He was once an exciting director. And
when was that?
Now he does this. Well, he made, you know, You're Next, and
yeah, that's true. The Guest. Oh,
there's something more significant. I thought, yeah, The Guest, right, with him and Danny.
But then he made the Blair Witch remake, Death Note, and then these two Godzilla movies.
Things have gone downhill for him, to say the least. He got high on his own supply a little bit, I think, when he tried to remake the Blair Witch Project. But Scott, anything else you want to say about the cast in this movie? I mean, we don't really care about any of the human characters. Are any of the performers here able to salvage their reputations?
Yeah, I think, look, I like Dan Stevens. I genuinely do. And I like him doing this silly role. I just think, like we already said, everything's just not quite calibrated correctly. And so in terms of the three quote-unquote leads of the movie with Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, I don't really know that anyone fully redeems themselves. What I will say is that this franchise has with Kaylee Hoddle is interesting. The fact that she is a deaf performer, the fact that Rebecca Hall and everyone like learn sign language to actually communicate, it's very authentic communication. I think there's something very interesting there. I think the problem is this character of Gia, something about it, like, she just doesn't really give off a lot of emotion. I don't know if it's something in the acting or if it's a choice in the character itself, but she kind of just feels like a little bit of a wet blanket. I'll be honest. I'm not getting like much emotional resonance for me to connect with her to. She's this person who feels like completely isolated, doesn't feel like she belongs. She goes to Hollow Earth, discovers that there are people who, you know, are her people who are there and she can connect with. But partly because the movie doesn't choose to spend that much time at the end of the day on it, and partly because I think maybe there is a problem in the performance, we're just not connecting. I mean, Rebecca Hall is giving like so much more emotion in her performance than Kaylee Hoddle is, but you feel the anguish of her as this mother who like wants to make the world better for her adopted child and make her fit in. Like, you really do feel that with Rebecca Hall. I don't really feel anything the, other than like I'm sad and depressed and alone from feeling only, how to like there's no emotional journey through the movie for it. It all feels the same.
The only times when she really like I think it conveys something is when she's interacting with Kong or when she's, you know, reflecting her feelings about Kong. The mother-daughter relationship, I don't know, it doesn't seem to really have any impact on her. And again,
it's one-sided for sure. Yeah.
Her relationship with Kong, like, who cares? Who cares?
Let Kong cook. Let him be dad.
I guess they did let him cook in this movie. But yeah, I mean, I
he didn't cook enough. He got that tooth. He had that broken tooth.
That's true.
You gotta cook your meat better, man.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. Like, I made the joke in my Letterboxd review, but like this is depressing to see the years of, you know, saying that Rebecca Hall needs to be a bigger deal, a bigger actress has led to this. And, you know, to be fair, she still has put out some interesting movies in the last few years. She, you know, did The Night House and Resurrection, which are both pretty weird movies that she was great in. So, you know, one for them, one for everyone.
We'll always have Iron Man 3.
Yeah. One for us, one for them. But it is depressing to see somebody of her ability, somebody of Brian Tyree Henry's ability. Certainly he doesn't need this. I mean, I think he has a lot more goodwill towards him.
You know they were born in the same year, Rebecca Hall and Brian Tyree Henry? Fun fact.
Yeah, I believe that. But
does he? Yeah, in all seriousness, though, does he actually have a lot of other stuff going for him? Is that true? I think he does kind of need this.
Yeah, maybe he does. I don't know.
Atlanta ended 2 years ago. Now.
Yeah. Just something to me says that he's in the public consciousness more. I mean, he got an Oscar nomination for what movie was that a couple of years ago? Last year, he got an Oscar nomination for Cosmo.
He got it for Cosmo, but no one watched that movie.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, sure. You're probably right.
Bullet Train. I'm just thinking about it. I guess like 2023, he didn't have. I guess for me, the tough thing is that in 2023, he didn't really do anything. But in 2022, he was in Bullet Train as like a main supporting role. He did get an Oscar nomination for Causeway. That's a really good call. And he was in Eternals. So I take it all back. You know, he's fine. He's totally fine. He doesn't need it.
The movie that we all know and love, Eternals.
Listen to this 2021 for Brian Tyree Henry. All right, hear me out. Godzilla versus Kong, The Woman in the Window, Eternals, and this animated film called Vivo, which I've never heard of before.
My man was cooking.
Dude, wowie. He turned the gas on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so that's the human element of the movie. I think we've belabored the point there. Scott, anything more you want to say about the, you know, the actual action here, including especially, I guess, the last 20 minutes when we see Godzilla and Kong fight briefly at the pyramids in Egypt, and then they align forces and they decide to take on the Scar King, and many buildings are destroyed. And
They decide, is that what's happening on the screen? They get together, they talk, and they decide to go fight.
A meeting of the minds occurs.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I already spoke earlier about how I really felt like early on, there's these different milestones in the film where there could be set pieces, right? I talked about Godzilla against Tiamat. There's an earlier set piece where Kong has like an initial face-off with Scar King and Shimo. And I think some of those work really well. Like I actually do really like when Kong meets Scar King and Shimo for the first time. I thought that worked really well as like basically a tease of the bigger thing to come. I thought the stuff with Godzilla was always extremely brief, like not showing enough of what's happening when Godzilla is fighting other monsters. I mean, the thing is just like he's so much more powerful than everyone else and he's just like tearing people apart. Okay, I guess. But that's not very entertaining at the end of the day. Like there just needs to be more there. But I do think that the final climactic battle it sort of delivers on what was being hyped up. You see, you know, they fight in Hollow Earth for a little bit, then they go to Brazil. I think these things, man, I don't know. I'm not convinced that these sort of like large metropolitan area settings for like big kaiju fights like really work. I didn't really think it worked last time. They were somewhere in Asia last time when they fought. I can't remember where. Might have been Singapore, might have been China, might have been Japan. I don't really remember where they fought in Godzilla versus Kong. Maybe it was Japan.
It's just, it's a lot of tall buildings. It's a lot of skyscrapers. Like, it's just the classic image of Godzilla and Kong. It's like, I want to see something different. I want to see them in a different environment.
And that's why I totally agree. And so when they went through the portal or whatever, and they ended up in Rio de Janeiro, I'm just like, I don't know. I thought the stuff that they were doing in Hollow Earth was really cool. The fact that they like deactivated gravity or whatever the hell they were doing with the different like pyramid, I don't know, stalagmites, stalactites, whatever. Like, I thought that was like the fact that they were having to fight in like zero G was cool. It felt like that they had a concept there for this massive kaiju battle where like there's just so much weight and so much gravity with these huge creatures. Like, you take all that away, what do you get? I think you have something interesting there, right? But then rather than like iterating on that through like different phases of the fight, they decide to go back to like, you know, what we're all familiar with and what we're all comfortable with, to your point. And maybe that works. That gives people what they want. I think you kind of already got that when Kong and Godzilla fight at the pyramids. Like, you see some pyramids destroyed. Yeah. And I think that there is this like funny thing where Kong's just like, I don't want to fight you. I just want to get you down into Hollow Earth. But then you fuck my shit up. And so it's like, there's a funny sort of gag element to that. And then you get to see Kong realizing how powerful Godzilla is now with his like Tiamat energy absorbed. And he has like the pink, rose, red, purple heat ray now, as opposed to the blue one. So that's all like really cool. But in the fight with Scar King and Shimo, I think it works for the most part. And so again, I think that the monster element, with some exceptions, does deliver. But again, the exceptions are like, there's these moments in the film where there's opportunity to have more of it, and they don't have more of it. They just sort of breeze past it, which is a weird choice when it feels like that's what the film needs to be about.
Yeah, a lot of weird choices made. Just that's all I have to say, really. And, you know, again, I kind of already gave my thoughts on my major thought on the last, you know, conflict is that there's just a little bit too much going on, a little too many auxiliary characters getting involved that just kind of confuse things.
It feels like when you introduce Mothra,
Mothra doesn't even factor in that much. Like the part that we're talking about in the city with the skyscrapers and sure, all that, Mothra is not there. Yeah.
I think
Mothra is different. Like, again, Mothra is something unique. Like, that wasn't really my issue. Again, it was more just like, oh, we have the apes, you know, we have the Scar King, we have Godzilla, and they just all, it gets a little samey.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've sort of seen all this like a little bit before. I mean, in many ways, right? Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla in the last movie. Here it's Kong versus like alternative Kong in this movie. They understand that there has to be something a little bit different, but they're not maybe getting different enough. And I know people like seeing the big buildings get smashed, but I do think doing something more interesting with how the fight is being fought, which is what they were doing in Hollow Earth, that seems more appealing to me. Yeah, too many characters. I mean, the fact that there were still, like, you're still getting cutbacks to, like, Rebecca Hall and Brian Tyree Henry and Kaylee Hoddle in the during the big fight. I'm just like, what is happening? Like, why are we doing this?
Well, we have to know what is going on with all of our favorite characters, like the one guy and the child and
the black
her
man.
Mom.
Yeah.
That's basically what it amounts to, but
sure. I think it's a disappointing choice at the very end, but I think again for the most part I think the monster stuff doesn't disappoint nearly as much as it did in Transformers. I think, because again, I'm just sort of watching this movie and thinking about Transformers, I do think that they get like the big the big guys punching each other and shooting each other and breathing heat rays at each other, or frost rays in the case of Shimo. I think they get that part right. Like, I think the one thing that I will say is that when Shimo comes out of the portal and is like riding through the wave at the Copacabana in Rio and like freezing the water, like that's cool. Like, yeah, that is cool. And then it devolves into just like destroying buildings or whatever. But there's like, there is stuff that's cool that's happening. It's just not 100% there all the time. Yeah.
That was what I was going to say for my favorite scene or moment. And actually, thank you for bringing it up, because I remember there was one part when I was watching the movie and I was like, this is what I'm going to say on the podcast, because okay, it was the yeah, only moment that I was kind of like, oh. And that was, I could, sitting here, I couldn't remember what it was until you said that that's what it was. But that's it. So there you go. How about you, Scott? What's your favorite scene or moment?
Well, I tell you, it's not anything with a human, so I promise you that much. I think probably when they're fighting in like zero gravity in Hollow Earth, right? When you have them like using the different like chunks of rock or whatever and like trying to like shoot off of each other, like shoot off and back and forth. I think that's pretty cool. I do like that element. Mothra being a sort of like support character, like the healer and ferrying people around into safety, things like that. Like, adding those elements are cool. It's like what the film is building up towards, right? And like I've sort of said several times now, I think that part of does deliver on what you're hoping for. I will say, I have this funny thing, not favorite scene or moment, but when I was watching the movie and it comes on the screen, they have the opening scene or whatever, and it's Kong and he's like getting chased by these, I don't know, like hound hyena like creatures in Hollow Earth. And I gotta say, didn't realize they gave Kong gray hair in this franchise, because I'm looking at this sort of like gray haired ape, I'm like, is that's not Kong, right? I was like, is that Kong? I wasn't sure.
You don't know. Not enough saying of characters' names in this movie. But
yeah, the hyenas needed to be screaming Kong, Kong, as they chased him to sort of identify that it was Kong.
Kong bows to no man, and he still does. Scott, give this thing a score.
Oh man, I give it a 5.
Right down the middle. I give it a 3.1. I didn't really enjoy any part of this experience. It was boring. It was perfunctory. It was just not for me. Not for me on any level, but some people seem to be enjoying it. So, all right, Scott, well, that'll do it for our review of Godzilla Times Kong, The New Empire. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we do have a couple of news items, including a new project from one of my favorite directors, as well as a new project for a very recent Oscar winner. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of Some Like It, Scott. Scott, I just have to set the record straight about something. If you all listen to Just Our Opinion, which is the first episode that we did with Paul a few weeks ago, then you would have heard us discuss the idea of director jail and a director being, you know, barred effectively from putting out new projects. And I named one David Robert Mitchell, director of It Follows and Under the Silver Lake, as being a person in director jail. And I was somewhat mocked for that choice. And that continued even from people who were not present on the StreamYard that day.
Oh, really?
A friend of the podcast, Zach Ford, had a little bit of fun with my choice.
Hey, someone listened. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. But let's just say he is, if he was ever in director jail, he is not anymore. Okay. Because he has a new project has been announced. And I will say, to my credit, the Film Stage, which is a fairly reputable source, the title of the article in which they announced his new film is David Robert Mitchell is finally released from director's jail. So I was not the only person who was thinking this, but I guess maybe I was a little wrong, but regardless, Scott, I'm very happy that a new project has been announced for David Robert Mitchell, not just the It Follows sequel, They Follow, which we know is happening, but haven't really heard anything about since then. This is an original project called Flowervale Street. I will be celebrating my 30th birthday by seeing this film because it is.
This is his dinosaur movie, right?
Yeah, it's unclear, but it does appear that that's sort of what it's going for. But yeah, it's going to be released on May 16th, 2025. So like I said, I'll be celebrating my 30th birthday by going to see a new David Robert Mitchell joint. Yeah, this movie is described as a 1980s set thrill ride slash family adventure that may be shooting in IMAX. So I would expect there's going to be some big scale stuff going on. Yeah, we did hear about this dinosaur thing that he was doing for a couple of years. So this could very well be it. But Scott, he's back in a big way because he's got Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor going to star in this film. Certainly the biggest actors that he's ever worked. Yeah, I mean, you know, he did work with Garfield on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Garfield is probably a little bit bigger than Ewan McGregor, but Anne Hathaway, obviously a huge star, and Ewan McGregor still, I think, carries a lot of weight, even though he's removed from playing Obi-Wan for a little bit, by a few years. Although I guess not that many years because they had the TV series. But
I was gonna say, 1 year.
Yeah. But both big time actors, and David Robert Mitchell is going to be teaming up with them for this film. Scott, I'm excited for it. This is going to be a Warner Brothers project. You know, one of my favorite things about him as a director is the technical craft in his films, which, you know, is partially on him and partially on his collaborators, on Mike Jalakis, who he works with in the cinematography department, Disaster Piece, who he works with in the music department. I don't know yet whether they're attached to this project as well. I hope that they are, but I think, you know, that him getting a big budget, you know, making something on a big scale like this, potentially even in IMAX, is something that really excites me because, you know, the big screen experience, at least of seeing It Follows for me, was one of the reasons that I love that movie so much, because it's a gorgeous movie to look at. And I didn't even get to see Under the Silver Lake in theaters, obviously, but it did have the same sort of, you know, epic widescreen look and feel to it. So I think him making a blockbuster, you know, there's not a lot of directors that if my favorite directors, I'd be like, hey, yeah, let's go. Let's have them go do a blockbuster. But he is one that I'm interested to see what he can do, because I think he can bring something interesting in that craft department. And, you know, again, the adventure movie, we've had a lot of conversation about it. We talked about it last year with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, about it being sort of a dying genre. You know, maybe he can somehow inject a little bit of life into what I do think is a dying genre. I'm certainly willing for him to give it a try.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that he's been given $80 to $100 million to make this movie, considering I'm not sure from a business side what he's done to earn $85 to $100 million to make this movie. But I'm not complaining. I'm more bemused by the fact that he managed to convince, you know, J.J. Abrams to back the project, who has his overall deal with Warner Brothers, which is why it ended up there. Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor, certainly, you know, at least relatively big stars. You can debate whether Garfield's bigger. I'm not really interested in that conversation personally.
Yeah,
but it's just one of the things where it's like, man, I'm really surprised that anyone's willing to fund that level, like that scale of investment. But hey, that's awesome for us, because he definitely is a filmmaker with a vision. Whether you think that vision pays off is a separate question for sure. Obviously, people's mileage have varied on some of his more recent, Under the Silver Lake specifically. But, you know, I'm excited to see if Flowervale Street resonates with me more than Under the Silver Lake did. And I certainly like Anne Hathaway, and Ewan McGregor I've been hit and miss on, but I think overall I'm positive on him.
Sure. Yeah, no, a lot of potential here, I think. Definitely one to keep an eye on. I mean, we know when it's coming out, so that's exciting too.
Yeah, but, and it seems like it's still
about a year's time.
I think it's filming right now.
Yeah. All right, Scott. Well, as I alluded to as well, there's also a new project to talk about involving a recent Oscar winner. Why don't you tell us what J. Robert Oppenheimer himself, Cillian Murphy, has coming up.
Yeah, in his next life, J. Robert Oppenheimer. No, I'm kidding. So Cillian Murphy, yes, you mentioned, you alluded to it already, won the Best Actor Oscar this past year for Oppenheimer, does seem to have found his next big project after he's already sort of touted, I mean, I guess a next project since winning the Oscars for his first project, because he technically has had another smaller film debut at Sundance this past year, which I think has gotten a lot of buzz. So I'm excited to see that later this year. It's a much smaller Irish drama. And that's very exciting to me to see him acting on a bit of a different scale. But he has been attached to another biopic, or at least I think it's a biopic. I'm now wondering whether it's a biopic or whether it's like a narrative fiction. But the title of the adaptation based on a book of the same name is called Blood Runs Cold, The Yablonsky Murders and the Battle for the United Mine Workers of America. So it sort of has the same level of like biopic epicness, maybe a little bit smaller epic, but still epic feel. Yeah, no. So it's epic giving, feel.
It's giving the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Yeah. To me, when, I mean, obviously these are different things, because again, I think this is a biopic type film, a historical fiction, at the very least. Versus There Will Be Blood, but it was giving There Will Be Blood vibes for me. I'm not saying Cillian Murphy is yet at the scale of a Daniel Day-Lewis, who obviously was immense, I think it's fair to say.
And we don't know who's directing this either.
And There Will Be Blood, and that is true. We don't know yet who is directing it. We do know that Jez Butterworth, who wrote Ford vs. Ferrari, is writing the script with, I think, his brother, John Henry. That duo also did Edge of Tomorrow, so there is some track record. Not necessarily the people who wrote Edge of Tomorrow and Ford vs. Ferrari is not necessarily who you'd expect to be writing this sort of like very high drama, maybe like crime corruption type film. Maybe Ford vs. Ferrari sort of edges that direction, but it is an interesting mix. It's an epic story of a corrupt union leader who murders a rival and is taken down by the lawyer son of the slain coal miner. So it is a sort of like epic crime legal drama.
Yeah. Sounds almost similar to, you know, his other biggest role in Peaky Blinders, you know, obviously on Netflix, like kind of has a similar feel to it.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that film is so fun. I mean, or I shouldn't say film, that TV show is certainly an interesting comparison. I think that it's maybe a similar vibe. It depends on, I guess, who the main characters and who Cillian is playing. Like, I don't know if he's playing. I assume he's playing the son of the son who is sort of seeking retribution. But I'm not 100% sure. It's set in Pennsylvania in the late 1960s. And it is, yes, it is a biopic. It is one of the most infamous crimes in the history of organized labor, if you believe that. I don't know if Martin Scorsese has a thing to say about that with The Irishman. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think Cillian, not that he showed something new or different in Oppenheimer, but he reminded us, I think it's fair to say, on a bigger stage what he was capable of. And I think the fact that his name is attached automatically, no matter who directs this project, ends up making it even bigger. And so I think for that reason and the subject matter, it gets me really excited. I think Cillian is, you know, very quickly becoming one of my actors to watch just based on the performance he gave in Oppenheimer and the fact that I have enjoyed him maybe at a lower level or a lower relevance over the years in different roles. Like, I've only seen a few seasons of Peaky Blinders, but I do think that he's awesome in that. And I've certainly liked him in all the stuff that I've seen him from Nolan over the years. So I think it's now just now that he's stepped up onto that bigger stage, it's sort of more recognizing him in the spotlight for what he's capable of. And I think because of that, this does get me excited for Blood Runs Cold. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely in. It sounds like an interesting story. I mean, one that hasn't been told before, or certainly one that I'm not familiar with, not, you know, a story that has been depicted. So I'm in favor of that sort of biopic. I mean, look, I think good biopics can be some of the best movies. I mean, Oppenheimer is certainly an example. Killers of the Flower Moon, in its own way, also sort of a biopic, a biodrama, which I guess this is going to be more of a biodrama, historical drama. But those can be some of the best movies. I will definitely want to see who is directing this, because I think that will adjust my hype level, perhaps either up or down. But right now, you know, a promising writing team, a big time actor playing a significant role, and you know, a story that catches my interest. So
yeah,
sounds like a lot of good ingredients.
Yeah, for sure. I was just quickly reading a summary. This actually seems like it might end up being a little bit more of a legal drama, so it might even be something even more up your alley.
Sure.
I'm not saying it's giving Dark Waters vibes, but I could see like maybe there is some spin a little bit like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I'm down for even a mediocre legal drama these days, but if it's on the level of Dark
He's
Waters,
down
if,
so if we, bad.
If we can get Todd Haynes in here, or somebody of Todd Haynes' level.
If Todd Haynes directs us, that would be insane.
Oh, baby. Yeah, he's not going to direct it. Somebody on his level would be pretty hype.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Scott. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode of Some Like It. Scott, where can our listeners find you on social media?
At @shelton2013.
And I am at Scarvy Dent on all platforms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you have and you'd like to support us, don't forget about our Patreon page at patreon.com/mediaplugpods. Even if you can't support us over there, however, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, like, do all the things that you do on your preferred podcast app. And we hope we'll be back for our next episode of the podcast, on which we'll be reviewing the Dev Patel-led action thriller Monkey Man. But until then, for Scott Shelton, I'm Scott Harvey. We'll see you down the road.